This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Sahran condemns the European Union and the UK for imposing new sanctions on Iran, saying it will soon reciprocate the measures. Moroccan lawmakers vote unanimously to review ties with the European Parliament after it passed a resolution urging the kingdom to respect press freedom. Also ahead, Turkey summons the Dutch ambassador in Ankara over a protest in The Hague during which a copy of the Holy Quran was torn apart. World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, Tehran strongly condemns the European Union and the UK for imposing sanctions on dozens of Iranian individuals and entities, including officials of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the sanctions by Brussels and London show that they don't have a proper understanding of the realities in Iran. Kanani says the sanctions also demonstrate the desperation and anger in Brussels and London over what he called their humiliating failure to create instability in Iran. He noted that Tehran will soon reciprocate and slap sanctions against the violators of human rights and promoters of terrorism in the EU and the UK. On Monday, Brussels approved restrictions against 37 Iranian individuals and organizations over the country's response to the recent riots. On the same day, Washington and London also blacklisted a number of Iranian officials and entities. We've asked geopolitical analyst Hania Tarkian about the EU's move to impose fresh anti-Iran sanctions. She says the bloc doesn't have an independent foreign policy and serves the interests of the US in its policy making.
The Western governments and in specifically the European Union has no independent foreign policy. It just follows the interests of the United States. And, the Western government supported and are still supporting a terrorist group in Syria and in Iraq. The United States even supported ISIS. And this is what American politicians and analysts say. And so, and we know Iran and the specifically the IRGC had a decisive role in the defeat of the terrorist group in the terrorist groups in West Asia, and this is why Americans killed General Soleimani. This is why the Western governments, UK government in particular, do so much propaganda against Iran, against the IRGC.
The Moroccan parliament unanimously votes to reconsider ties with the European Parliament, accusing the body of meddling in the country's internal affairs.
Today, we sent a clear message that we need to review the status and the relations with the European Parliament. We must assess what has been done and what must be done. But we cannot keep ignoring it like that. And they come and change their minds and teach us lessons. We are a country with roots and centuries of civilization, and we cannot accept that someone acts like this and starts lecturing us senselessly.
In a statement, the legislators called the European resolution an unacceptable attack against the sovereignty, dignity, and independence of judicial institutions in Morocco. They said the move has seriously damaged the basis of trust and cooperation between Rabat and Brussels. The European resolution urged the kingdom to respect press freedom and guarantee a fair trial for jailed journalists. However, Moroccan authorities
say court proceedings against journalists focus on crimes such as sexual assault and have nothing to do with freedom of speech. It's time now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in a little bit more detail. Turkey's foreign ministry has summoned the Dutch ambassador to protest the desecration of the Holy Quran in the country. The ministry says it condemned the move as heinous and despicable. The ministry said such actions show the rampant Islamophobia, discrimination, and xenophobia in Europe. According to the ministry, Ankara also called on Amsterdam to prevent the repetition of such provocative acts. This comes after a copy of the Holy Quran was torn apart during a protest in the Dutch city of The Hague. It followed an incident in Sweden where a politician burned a copy of the Quran outside the Turkish embassy. The move has drawn condemnations and protests in Muslim countries. Joining us for more on that is Rashan Saglam, our correspondent, for more analysis, and also Saeed Shahabi, writer and political analyst from London, for more commentary. Welcome, as Rashan, if I could start with you, what's the latest from Turkey? There's a lot of anger there. We're hearing news of emerging from Turkey.
Actually, as you mentioned, Ankara had summoned the envoy of Dutch Netherlands to claim or condemn what happened from tearing the Holy Quran. The Turkish Foreign Ministry announced in a statement that this act is considered a vile act. It is an act against all Muslims, and it's not acceptable. Also, it says that such an act shows that it's blatant proof that Islamophobia, discrimination, and xenophobia knows no bound in Europe. Now, also, the President Erdogan had said earlier that such acts do insult our holy values and the Islamic values. He also said and threatened Sweden earlier that they're concerning the bid of NATO and Sweden wanting to join the NATO. He said that Turkey will not support that. He said that as long as Sweden does not respect NATO member Turkey or Muslims around the world, Turkey will not support Sweden's bid to join the bloc. Now, also during the weekend, the spokesperson of the President Erdogan, Ibrahim Kalin, had also condemned the burning of the Holy Quran in Sweden. And today also a lot of politicians in Turkey condemned, not only officials, also politicians from other political parties other than the AK Party had condemned the burning of or tearing of the Holy Quran in Netherlands, in Hague.
Right.
In Turkey, we have to mention here that Turkey is not only a secular country, it is actually a secular country, but it is in the first place a Muslim country. It is member of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and had long stood against any kind of Islamophobia around the world, especially from coming from the West.
Indeed. So, Saeed, why do you think the governments of some Western countries, under the name of freedom of speech, allow the blasphemy against Islam, but do not allow blasphemy against any other religion?
Thank you very much. Of course, the double standards always are characteristics of those policies of those countries. Unfortunately, to burn somebody's holy book, any book, the book of Muslims, the Holy Quran or the Bible or the Torah or any other book that is sacred to any nation, to any group of people, is just an incitement of hatred, incitement for violence. And that is against the fundamentals of modern statehood and modern society. The whole world is working in order to achieve peace among the people. And peace can only be achieved If respect becomes the order of the day, you cannot be a member of NATO, as Sweden wishes to be, when you are infuriating and attacking the values of another NATO member, which is Turkey. But at the same time, it's not only Turkey. Turkey here is only one member of 57 or about 60 Muslim countries, about 2.1 billion Muslims, 2.1 billion Muslims in the world. Why on earth do we really look to infuriate them? What is there in the freedom of speech that allows such a move? Would they be? Would anybody be allowed to go and, for example, burn the flag of the, say, the LGBT anywhere in any country, or attack the Holocaust in any country? So why is it only the Quran that is the being victimized and being burned and being slandered? I think there is a lot to be done in the West, in NATO, in the EU, against this move.
Thank you very much indeed. Let me thank our guests. Rashan Saglam is, of course, our correspondent in Istanbul, and Saeed Shahabi is a writer and political analyst joining us from the British capital, London. That brings an end to another edition of the News Review. Now, EU Foreign Affairs ministers rubber stamp an additional €500 million in military support for Ukraine. This as peace activists call on the bloc leaders to take a different approach. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Ukrainian officials took part in a meeting of EU foreign affairs ministers on Monday via video link. An additional €500 million military aid package for Kiev was confirmed, but the EU is at pains to point out that's just a drop in the ocean compared to what the bloc has already provided since last March.
Keep in mind the figure of 49 billions is the total amount of support to Ukraine, military, financial, economic, and humanitarian.
Just a few days ago in the European Parliament, the strategy was condemned.
It's militarism that's driving a dramatic rise in geopolitical tensions, drastically undermining our security. And you'd think that the Ukraine war would have shocked us out of this approach, but no.
Workers have taken to the streets of Brussels to demand peace negotiations.
We need to stop this war because it's affecting our workers, and our workers have already been affected with prices because of the COVID situation.
EU foreign ministers adopted a fresh round of sanctions against Iran on Monday over alleged human rights abuses. The grounds for such sanctions are vehemently rejected by Tehran. Critics say the West's policy towards Russia and Iran is being driven by Washington. Moscow and Tehran control the largest energy reserves in the world. Analysts say the EU's access to these markets is being hampered due to influence from the United States, and ultimately it is ordinary citizens who are paying the price. Also on Monday, Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtaya updated EU foreign ministers on the appalling situation in the occupied territories. There was absolutely no discussion on the EU side regarding possible sanctions against Israel. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Several senior Ukrainian officials announced their resignation as the government moves to crack down on corruption amid a string of high-level cases. The Defense Ministry has announced the resignation of a deputy minister who was in charge of the army's logistical support. It comes after the ministry was accused of signing food contracts at inflated prices. The deputy head of the presidential office was also among the officials who stepped down. On Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky banned all foreign travel by government officials except for work. Zelensky's government also removed a deputy minister over the weekend after his arrest on suspicion of embezzlement. Moving on, hundreds of French bakers have rallied in Paris to protest the surging costs of electricity and raw material. The demonstrators say the financial schemes put in place by the authorities are either too complicated, too slow to deliver help, or available for only the smallest bakeries. Bakers were already struggling with rising butter and flour costs, as well as eggs, but soaring energy prices have become the last straw. Some protesters said their power bill went up sixfold in January. Last Thursday, more than a million people also protested against an unpopular government pension reform plan. And that was one of the biggest demonstrations in the country in decades. The US has witnessed another incident of deadly gun violence. Seven people are killed after a gunman goes on a rampage in the state of California. The mass shooting took place at two locations in the coastal city of Half Moon Bay. Police say they found four people dead at the first location. Three other bodies were discovered at another site, which is said to be a farm. Police have arrested the assailant, identified as a 67-year-old man. He was driving to a police parking lot to turn himself in. California has seen two mass shootings in almost 48 hours now. The earlier one killed 11 people in a city near Los Angeles. The shootings have once again thrown the spotlight on the scourge of gun violence in the U.S.
Gun violence in this country is at completely unacceptable levels. It's really hit home tonight. Our hearts are broken. We are deeply grateful for law enforcement for their work this evening. But in the end, there are simply too many guns in this country, and there has to be a change. This is not an acceptable way for a modern society to live its and conduct its affairs.
Just hours before the Half Moon Bay shooting, a similar incident hit the state of Iowa, where at least two students were killed at a youth outreach center. 38 mass shootings have taken place in the U.S. in the past three weeks, since the turn of the year. Over the past years, there have been growing calls for passing stricter legislation on gun control, curtailing access to weapons in the country, but these have largely been undermined by powerful gun lobbies, including the National Rifle Association.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. One is shy to talk about what happened to women in the West last year, the sexual assaults and such things. Despite all that, they still say they support women and are in favor of women's rights. This is what is called women's freedom in the impious language of the West. This is what is called women's freedom in the impious language of the West. When they say women's freedom, what they mean is this type of freedom. These things are freedom in their opinion. This is not freedom. This is slavery. They are insulting women. Unfortunately, it took a long time before we realized this inside the country. After the revolution, much of this became clear to us. But before the revolution, a number of people even said this is what they had imagined, that this free relationship between men and women in the West allows men to be satisfied and prevent sexual abuse and offenses that were sometimes committed in different places. When men are satisfied, they will no longer commit those offenses. This is what they had imagined. Now, does it seem like they are satisfied, or have they become 100 times greedier, as can be seen with the sexual assaults that are taking place?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They are constantly reporting on this, about what's happening in workplaces, in the streets and in markets everywhere. Harassment is even taking place in organized, ironclad organizations like the army, where women are also present. Harassment is different from consensual debauchery. Consensual debauchery is already a problem. On top of that, sexual assault is also taking place. So not only have they not become satisfied, their greed and the lust have increased 100-fold. This is why when you look at the environment in the West today, you see there is a sex trade, sexual slavery, and transgression of all moral and conventional boundaries, and the legislation of things such as homosexuality, which is forbidden in all divine religions. Talk about homosexuality being forbidden and things like that is not just something found in Islam. These are major sins in all religions. They legalize these, and they really do not even feel ashamed about it. Therefore, one of the actions that is obligatory in our society is that we must strictly avoid the Western viewpoint on the issue of gender and sexuality.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Fractures are appearing in the Ukraine conflict between the Western backers of the war, first amongst themselves, then with Ukraine. Even though some 50 nations agreed to provide Kyiv with billions of dollars worth of military hardware, including armored vehicle and munitions needed to push back Russian forces, Germany has refused to provide Ukraine with Leopard tanks. Not only that, it has prevented other nations from transferring these tanks to Ukraine by countries that have them in their possession. The new German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said that despite heightened expectations, we still cannot say when a decision will be taken and what the decision will be when it comes to the Leopard tanks. This has angered Ukraine, which blasted the global indecision of its allies after Germany's refusal. A Ukrainian presidential advisor tweeted Today's indecision is killing more of our people. Every day of delay is the death of Ukrainians. Think faster. It appears that the main disagreement lies between the US and Germany, which has indicated that it would agree to do so only if the US provided its Abrams tanks as well. Washington has said providing its Abrams tanks to Ukraine is not feasible, citing difficulties in training and maintenance. This disagreement has led to friction within the circle of US congressmen. US Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has called on both countries to supply the machines. To the Germans, he said send the tanks to Ukraine because they need them. It is in your national interest that Russian President Vladimir Putin loses in Ukraine. To the US President Joe Biden administration, he said send American tanks so that others will follow our lead. Military assistance to Ukraine has continued unabated in recent weeks and months. The headline reads, Europe is gearing up to send Western tanks to Ukraine. It almost sounds like the warring parties are just getting warmed up to the conflict, that the war has entered a new phase. One conclusion could be that Ukraine is losing the war on the ground since it continues to seek more military assistance, and what it has received so far has not been enough to defeat the Russian forces. This, however, will not deter NATO and a number of individual member states who have pledged to provide heavier weapons to Ukraine. US's cautious stance may be that it does not want to fall into a direct conflict with Russia. That could also mean that it may risk defeat or that this risks getting into a nuclear confrontation. Russia's reaction to countries that are going to provide Ukraine with tanks was a warning. Dmitry Medvedev, deputy chairman of the Security Council of the Russian Federation, has said Kiev's foreign backers do not care about Ukrainian lives and are motivated by their desire to hurt Russia. Those tanks can burn and will burn like the rest of the weapons. The nations supplying them are using Ukraine as an instrument in achieving their anti-Russian goals. Russia has also stated that this is no longer a war between Russia and Ukraine, but a war between Russia and US and NATO. But what the Ukrainian defense minister said has been very telling. He tweeted recently, "We are carrying out NATO's mission today. They aren't shedding their blood. We are shedding ours. That's why they are required to supply us with weapons." All that brings everyone to the question, when will Ukrainians realize their country is being sacrificed for the sake of the US weakening Russia?
Zamir Kabulov, Russia's presidential envoy to Afghanistan, says that the U.S. has been reaching out to the Taliban's opposition groups, such as Daesh, and secretly giving money to them. He describes the reasoning for this covert support as such: because they really want to avenge their shameful military political defeat in Afghanistan, and in retaliation, they do everything so that peace isn't established in this troubled land. He further linked this move to Russia's security by saying, with the armed opposition in Afghanistan, the Anglo-Saxons are covertly sponsoring Daesh, who are aimed at undermining not only the stability of our Central Asian partners, but also the security of Russia. Allegations of the U.S. supporting Daesh in particular have been around for a decade at this point. Sometimes they even come from U.S. officials.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton. Co-founder, crooked Hillary Clinton.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is among the top officials that accused the United States of backing Daesh. Erdogan made the accusations in response to U.S. accusations against his government for supporting terrorist groups. He said, "Now they give support to terrorist groups including Daesh, YPG, PYD. It is very clear. We have confirmed evidence with pictures, photos, and videos." In a 3-year field study into the supply chain of Daesh, it was found that the arming and external funding that anti-Assad rebel groups received from the U.S. found their way into the hands of Daesh. With all the accusations on America's direct involvement in the founding of Daesh, the indirect involvement that most of the world agrees resulted in the creation of the terror group is the quote-unquote power vacuum that the U.S. left in the region by fighting the many wars it fought, especially the invasion of Iraq and the support of Syrian rebel groups. The U.S. effectively fought a war in Afghanistan for 20 years with a budget of over $2.1 trillion to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. The Taliban has been accused of many things since their swift power grab back in August of 2021, but what they have managed to do is stabilizing the country and ridding it of power struggles. That means groups like Daesh, who still have a presence in the region, weren't able to establish bases in Afghanistan, despite still carrying out terrorist attacks for a while after Taliban's takeover, the number of which have significantly dropped over the last year. Now, with around 97% of the population of Afghanistan below poverty line, and with half of the country's billions of dollars worth of foreign assets frozen by the U.S., the last thing the country can afford is U.S. shenanigans trying to prop up Takfiri terrorist groups there. Recently, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken poured salt on the wounds of Afghanistan by justifying the way the U.S. left Afghanistan by saying, if the forces had remained there, quote, it would have, I think, made much more complicated the support that we've been able to give and that others have been able to give Ukraine. Almost as if Afghanistan was a pawn in the grand scheme of U.S.'s political agendas, an attitude that isn't too uncommon in U.S. politics, with all of their friends and foes. Instances of such attitude are numerous, from the promise of retaliation to Saudi Arabia over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and then doing nothing about it because Saudi Arabia is a strategic partner to the U.S., to using Taiwan as a means to get under China's skin, that could lead to a conflict wherein Taiwan will turn into a pawn for U.S.'s political games.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has held a press briefing to give an update on the ongoing war in Ukraine. In his press briefing, which was held in Moscow on Wednesday, Lavrov accused Ukraine's foreign policy of being under the dictation of Western nations. The Russian top diplomat further noted that Western nations have yet to make, quote, serious proposals to Russia on how the conflict should be resolved. Lavrov added that Russia was willing to support a draft truce proposed by Ukraine in late March, but the proposal was destroyed by Ukraine's Western supporters. He also said, in reality, the West decides for Ukraine what its foreign policy should be. Western officials have repeatedly claimed that arming Ukraine would help it achieve a better negotiation position and that no talks with Russia should take place before this happens. Lavrov further said Moscow would react to any serious proposal for overcoming the crisis that come from the US and its allies, but none has been sent so far. He also added that the West is using Ukraine to destroy the security system that existed in Euro-Atlantic for many years. Lavrov's comments come amid deepening crisis in Ukraine. On Wednesday, a helicopter crash killed Ukraine's interior minister, his deputy, and the state secretary of the ministry. The deaths have been described as a huge blow for Ukraine. The United States and its Western allies are also ramping up their support for Ukraine. Reports say Mark Milley, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, met for a couple of hours with Ukraine's chief military officer, General Valery Zaluzhny, in Poland. This is the first face-to-face talks between them since the war began in February 2022.
The meetings are expected to focus on Ukraine's ongoing and future military needs. The United Kingdom has also pledged a squadron of its Challenger tanks, but it has too few to form the basis of a Ukrainian force. The moves by the United States and the UK come amid an apparent rift in the anti-Russia coalition.
Well, last year it was $2.3 billion, and from financial year 2023, we'll put in another $2.3 billion. Some of that is non-military aid, some of that is the likes of humanitarian support such as generators, some of that is obviously military hardware, some of it is training. We train 10,000 Ukrainians in the UK, and we'll train another 20,000 in the UK, and some of it is effectively backfilling British stock.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has named Boris Pistorius as the country's new defence minister at a time of mounting pressure on Berlin from Western allies to allow Ukraine to use German-made tanks in the war with Russia. However, Germany says when it comes to sending tanks to Ukraine, Berlin is still waiting for the US to take the lead.
And this is the strategy we have, that we are strategically interlocked together with our friends and partners, that we are working together with them, that we are discussing with them, and that we are never doing something just by ourselves, but together with others, especially the United States, which are very important in this common task to defend the Ukrainian independence and sovereignty.
Germany is under pressure to participate in a broader alliance of countries that will supply Ukraine's army with modern Leopard 2 battle tanks. The previous German defense minister, Christine Lambrecht, was a loyal defender of Chancellor Scholz's cautious tank stance. Analysts said the delay so far has to do with disagreements amongst Western countries about the lethality of the weapons Ukraine needed. Russia has denounced the Western weapons supplies. Officials say Ukraine's allies were using the country as a tool to achieve their anti-Russian goals. Kremlin says the tanks that the UK pledged will burn just like the rest.
The European Parliament has called for Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps to be put on the European Union's terror list. The legislator insists that sanctions targeting Tehran had to be expanded following the recent riots in the country. The bill is non-binding and musters a large majority to call on the EU's 27 member states for punitive actions to counter what it calls a swift backsliding of human rights in Iran. EU lawmakers cited the IRGC's handling of the recent riots in Iran and its alleged role in supplying drones to Russia for their decision. It would hit any economic and financial activity involving businesses and commercial activities related to, owned wholly or in part by, or fronting for the IRGC or IRGC-affiliated individuals, regardless of their country of operation. Iran has warned against plans by the European Parliament against the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the European Parliament has shot Europe in the foot by voting to call on the European Union and its member states to place Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the bloc's terror list. Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a phone call with the EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell. The top Iranian diplomat strongly criticized the European Parliament's emotional, injudicious, incorrect, and unprofessional behavior, which is in conflict with political rationality and civility. Amir Abdollahian said it is necessary to respect mutual security in the world of diplomacy and to increase mutual trust instead of following the language of threats and unfriendly actions. Iran has vowed to retaliate against any such move. Iranian lawmakers say that they will definitely show a serious reaction to the EU Parliament's undiplomatic move. The Iranian Parliament will also discuss this decision with high-ranking officials from the Foreign Ministry and other relevant bodies. The General Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces told Europe to be aware of the consequences of its action. IRGC has been the most important and effective force in the fight against terrorism hatched by the U.S., Israel, and certain Western regimes. IRGC has been involved in the fight against terror more than any other military force. It is also threatened by the sponsors of terrorism, above all, the occupying Israeli regime and the U.S. Iran has warned European governments would not be able to cope with the unbearable consequences of such a designation. It is believed that the EU and European governments need to maintain their independence from the U.S. and avoid taking any action against the IRGC, as such a hostile move could ruin any chance of negotiations with Iran.
Today, the United States is continuing to build its maximum pressure campaign against the Iranian regime.
I am announcing our intent to designate the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, including its Quds Force, as a foreign terrorist organization, in accordance with Section 219 of the Immigration and Nationality Act. This designation will take effect 1 week from today.
Back in 2019, the former U.S. President Donald Trump designated the IRGC as a foreign terrorist organization. That was the first time the U.S. labeled another nation's military as a terrorist organization, and Iran retaliated by declaring U.S. forces in West Asia as a terrorist organization. CENTCOM is the Pentagon wing that oversees Washington's security interests across the West Asia region, most notably Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, and Syria.
When the U.S. NATO bombed Afghanistan for 20 years and killed several hundred thousand and displaced millions, they were terrorizing the people. A UN survey showed that US NATO bombardments of civilians in Afghanistan, 45% of the people killed were children. When the US killed over a million civilians in Iraq, was that terrorism? When Israel terrorizes the Palestinian people every day, is that terrorism? When France and the UK and others armed the Saudi UAE to commit genocide in Yemen, where the UN said that over 400,000 are dead and 16 million are starving because of a genocide being carried out with the support of the US, the UK, France and several European states, is that terrorism? When he's going to wake up and start living in the real world?
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
امیر المؤمنین بزرگترین متواضع عالم هستی است چرا
امام علی علیه السلام was the most humble person before Allah after Prophet Muhammad. It is narrated that he used to pray hundreds of rak'ah of salat during the night. His prayers were rooted in his humbleness before Allah. That was because he knew who is the absolute source of power and knowledge in the universe. Sometimes people ran to Lady Fatima and informed her that your husband Ali fainted in the garden he was working. Lady Fatima stated, he is not fainting, he is worshipping Allah and he is drowned in his humbleness before Allah. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam used to tell Hammam, one of his companions, that the best attribute of the God-fearing people is their humbleness before Allah and His creatures. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's programme, we'll be delving into the background of a new British group known as Friends of Roots UK that promotes the normalisation of the Zionist entity. And we'll discuss how its normalisation agenda was stopped in its tracks. That's coming up right after this report by Latifa Abu Chakra about how Friends of Roots tried to infiltrate the UK via a speaking tour of the country that sought to legitimise ethnic cleansing in Palestine.
Friends of Roots UK is another Zionist normalisation project targeting young people in Britain. The organisation was originally founded in 2014 inside occupied Palestine, with the aim of bringing Palestinians and settlers who dispossessed them together in friendship. The founding of the organisation took place at the initiative of apparent human rights lawyer Sean Mark Lilling. In 2005, Sean Mark had been an advisor to the Israeli Prime Minister's office. Before that, he worked for the Israeli Ministry of Justice for 5 years. Mehra Beit and her husband were enamoured with Sean Mark's ideas. He was made a board member of their Geneva-based organization, Bait of Hope, and they backed the Friends of Roots campaign inside Palestine. Bait of Hope partners with the Alliance for Middle East Peace, which encompasses the One Voice organization and its normalization project, Solutions Not Sides, in British schools. Another organization that Bait of Hope partners with is Jerusalem, New York, which also seeks to bring together Palestinians and settlers. The Roots organization inside Palestine was headed by former Israeli military officer Raz Konis as coordinator of the youth division. Now the organization is in Britain and targeting young people for the same normalization push. The board of the UK branch contains several key figures of interest. Stephen Longdon, who is also the founding chair of the Normalization Project, the Forum for the Discussion of Israel and Palestine. He previously worked for Medical Aid for Palestinians. He is now the chair of the trustees at Friends of Roots. Leon Payne is a board member of North London Friends of Israel and is described as the Zionism advisor to the Muslim Friends of Israel Facebook group. Ruth Jacobs has worked with Solutions Not Sides in the past and is the founder and chair of West Midlands Friends of Israel. She is also a founder member of Nisat Nashim West Midlands, which I previously exposed as a Zionist normalization operation. Rabbi Hanan Schlesinger describes himself as a passionate Zionist settler. He was a founder of the branch in Occupied Palestine and is now the director of international relations for the UK branch. This is who is seeking to mislead children and young people towards normalization with settlers.
As ever, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. He also co-founded and is a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch. Our guest expert today is Sara Al-Wagfi, who's a UK-based Palestinian. She's a graphic designer and an activist. Sara's been centrally involved in the campaign to sabotage the activities of Friends of Roots in the UK with the Youth Front for Palestine. Welcome to the show. David, let me start with you. Where does Friends of Roots fit into the Zionist armoury? Is it linked to other groups that we've previously discussed in this programme?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, there are a whole range of different groups which pose as being sort of there to encourage dialogue and meaningful exchanges of information and ideas. And they're not really about promoting Israel at all. They're just about having dialogue. And it's very similar to some of the other organisations we've looked at in this programme, the Forum for the Discussion of Israel and Palestine, which we've looked at, Solutions Not Sides, which went into schools and was trying to propagandise school children, or Nisat Nashim, the women's organisation, which we exposed. We went to one of their meetings, I think, if you recall, exposed their actual pro-Zionist agenda. These are all organisations which are set up to mislead the people who are involved with them. And this organisation, Friends of Roots, is particularly egregious because it's not just about saying that Israel is a democracy like every other country and is a very nice place and you really shouldn't be critical of Israel. It's also bringing settlers into the equation. Now everybody knows under international law that settlers are illegal and they shouldn't be there. And yet this is there to try and humanise the settlers and present them as if they're just ordinary people who are looking for a life in the future. And that of course, is completely unacceptable.
Mm. And Sara, I mean, what do you make of Friends of Roots in the UK?
From the YFP perspective, essentially, Friends of Roots is pushing the narrative of normalization. They're pushing the idea that these dialogues that he's mentioned are essentially peace, related to peace and equality. But what they do is they generalize, they overwash, they honestly distract from the realities of Palestine and the daily struggles that Palestinians have to go through. So while we should be talking about more important things, what they do is that they pull us away as the youth and also anyone who's in the solidarity movement and create a false reality of dialogues that are misleading and divide our attention, frankly. So at the end of the day, this kind of organization seeks to divide the youth that reside in Manchester and London and across all of Britain. And the support is vast and large, and it's big, and we're proof of that. Yeah. And I think a really important thing is that their reaction to our large support for the Palestinian movement in Manchester, they target us because of the mass that we have.
Yeah.
And it's a really important thing to make sure that we continue to understand how they function in across Britain.
No, indeed. I mean, David, what do we know about Stephen Longdon and Ruth Jacobs, who seem to be the people running Friends of Roots UK?
So these are people who are not well known, but both of them had roles with other normalisation organisations, with FODIP, the Forum for Discussion of Israel and Palestine, and with Solutions Not Sides, which is run by this organisation called One Voice, set up by this passionate Zionist. One of them, in fact, has also been involved in a pro-Israel group, a Friends of Israel group. You know, it's pretty explicit. It says on the tin it's Friends of Israel group. So it's clear what's going on here. These are Zionist organizations presenting a front as if they're interested in dialogue or peace or finding a way to mutual understanding. There is no mutual understanding with the settlers. They must be removed and the land must be returned to the Palestinians. And that's the bottom line. There can be no dialogue about this.
Mm. Sarah, I wonder if you could tell us how the Youth Front for Palestine heard about Friends of Roots, and what did you find out about them?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We had already been looking into normalization as a organization. We were interested in understanding the different tactics used, but we actually came across the campaign through the British Muslim Heritage Center, and they had a leaflet advertising the event. And what's interesting about that is that we were having already been researching into it and trying to understand how these campaigns work. It kind of fell into our lap, and it was seemed like the perfect time to initiate a campaign. So at that point, we began researching into the individuals involved, the organizations involved, and how and where our targets and focuses need to go. So, for instance, Afzal Khan became a prime kind of focus for us, the British Museum Heritage Center, and Cholton High School, which is where the two events would be held. What's great about the turnout is that we actually didn't even need to protest, and that goes to show how brittle and, frankly, baseless the kind of Friends of Roots mission is. Our lack of protesting in a physical way wasn't because we hadn't planned it. It's because we were able to move in mass in online. We were able to petition, send letters in, call into the British Muslim Heritage Center. We were able to move our, you know, group of people and have a focus on the normalization campaign and utilize what we understand about normalization against them, essentially.
Sure, indeed. Well, David, I mean, this guy, Schlesinger, says he's a passionate settler, yet the title of their recent attempted tour was Two Truths in One Land. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, so this is a time-honoured settler-colonial way of explaining themselves. They want to say that they're just one set of people and that the other set of people who they've displaced and settled have their own truth as well. And really, we need to understand everybody's truth. And that's a way to have a settlement and to have some kind of dialogue and understanding between the two peoples. Well, no, on the contrary, there are not two peoples. There is one people which has been invaded, which has been settled, which has been occupied. And they're the ones that need to be removed. It's like saying if you were white settlers coming to North America, well, we are white settlers. We have our own background and culture, and which demands respect. Let's have a discussion between us and the Native Americans, and we'll see what kind of accommodation we can come to. No, not at all. What should be happening here is an understanding, which is that this is a brutal occupation, an invasion by settler colonialists, and it has to be ended.
Sarah, I wonder if you could just explain how Friends of Roots is actually involved in this kind of normalisation process.
Yeah. What's it doing? Well, we've spoken a little bit about the dialogue, the dialogue sessions. What they do is they have an Israeli settler and a essentially token Palestinian come in and have a dialogue. And again, we've spoken about how it's a distraction, how these conversations are essentially disguised as peace and quality, but what they do is they diminish the truths of what's going on, and it changes the language. It's very interesting. Language is the most important thing about, and as for YFFP, we have a dictionary that we understand, and we try to inform ourselves and the local Manchester-like city, and language such as conflict, language such as oppression. We need to use what the real words are, right? Sure. It's not a conflict. It's an oppression, and understanding how language functions in these dialogues is something that they try to utilize against us. Yeah. So a part of our job as YFFP members to combat, you know, Friends of Roots is to essentially make sure that we gather the youth and inform them as much as possible, especially on social media.
Sure. Well, I'm just going to thank you for that. We're just going to pause there for a moment to watch this report now about the successful campaign by the Youth Front for Palestine against the Friends of Roots.
Friends of Roots tried to infiltrate the UK by taking its message of normalising settlement and ethnic cleansing on a speaking tour of the UK. They claim that over 9 days they would start with a visit to the Scottish Parliament, then take in London, Luton, Cambridge, Oxford, Warwick, Birmingham, Huddersfield, Manchester, Salford and Trafford. Co-chair Stephen Longdon claim that all are welcome to the meetings, but only 3 of the 20 events listed on the